Harbo and Samuelson, lawyers, an insurance firm? No, they were immigrant Norwegian clam diggers, the first to row across the Atlantic in 1896. They had planned the trip for over a year as a way to make their mark beyond clam digging. They were each hard workers with high integrity and considerable skills as fishermen, and Harbo was happily married to his Norwegian sweetheart, Anine, with three small children and a house in Brooklyn. Samuelson was unmarried, but with a sister also living in that section of Brooklyn that had many Norwegian immigrant families. Samuelson's parents and other siblings still lived in Norway on a small farm. They left the battery in their open rowboat in June 1896, with onlookers yelling, "Good luck! You're mad!" and off to Davy Jones's locker. The wooden boat was 18 foot long, no rudder, and they had stocked it with cans of corned beef, baked beans, ham, salmon, coffee, boxes of brown bread, a crate of 250 raw eggs, and 60 gallons of water stored in galvanized steel tanks secured to the bottom. They had several extra pairs of oars, all secured to the boat, and at each end was a watertight compartment holding matches, Harbo's writing paper, a nautical almanac, a quadrant, they couldn't afford a sextant, and a small kerosene stove. Also with them was a large American flag. Their boat was called the Fox, after R.K. Fox, owner and publisher of a popular local New York paper. The Statue of Liberty had been unveiled just 10 years earlier, and Marconi's faint Morse code signals would not cross between Cornwall and Cape Cod until 1901. Gales, fog, rain, and heavy seas battered them for their first 3 weeks, and the two were cold and wet most of the time, despite their oilskins. Not far from the Grand Banks, as they rowed through the night on three-hour watches, an iceberg loomed above them. More gales from the direction of Canada gave 20-foot waves, white-capped and frothing, and ultimately a 40-foot-high nighttime rogue wave smashed over them. The sailors were lifted up into the air, their rope tethers wrenching their bodies painfully, and they found themselves gasping in the freezing North Atlantic, but fortunately still attached to the now upside-down boat. They had wisely put a railing on the underside and managed to right it in the raging waves and wind, but the next morning they realized much of their supplies were gone. There was perhaps enough food and water for another 5 days if they limited themselves to one meal a day. The westerly gales, however, had blown them many miles forward. David Shaw's book, Daring the Sea, is taken almost entirely from Harbo's log. Shaw comments that while they had each other, 5 days of food and water halfway between England and America meant certain death. But by a stroke of luck, in calmer weather, a sailing vessel carrying lumber from Canada to Europe, and temporarily slowed by lack of wind, actually saw them as they frantically rowed closer. Astonishingly, it was a large boat with a Norwegian captain and crew. Given a hearty evening meal, a night of rest, and most importantly, accurate latitude and longitude, Harbo and Samuelson were restocked with food and water, and with still sore hands and burned skins the next day were on their way again. The earlier foul weather let up for much of the second half of the Atlantic, and the weak Gulf Stream was a help. Harbo's careful noontime measurements of latitude kept them on a remarkably accurate course, and on August the 1st they reached landfall, which was the rocky Scilly Isles just off Cornwall. There isn't time to describe how their little kerosene stove caused a fire, how they were nearly run down by a steamer in the night, and how after Cornwall they went on to Le Havre and rowed up the Seine to Paris, nor how they did not earn the monetary rewards they had hoped for. For a while they went back to clam digging off the New Jersey shore. Harbo died only a dozen years later from pneumonia in 1909, and Samuelson returned to Norway to run his family's small farm. He died in 1946.